thinking about women in the Hadith. And I think that you will have read Phil Parshall's chapter 16 in his book. The name of the book? Inside the Community. And the subtitle?
Understanding Muslims Through Their Traditions.
Understanding Muslims Through Their Traditions. And so we're looking at the chapter on women. And then we will look a bit at Stoas's book, Women in the Quran, Traditions and Interpretation. So our focus is on traditions. And so just a word about traditions. You've come across the word sunnah, S-U-N-N-A-H. The sunnah and the traditions are basically the same. The word sunnah means the custom, habit, and usage of the Prophet. This includes his behavior, how he did things, his sayings and declarations. These form a body of rules and examples to be followed in detail. For example, a man should trim his beard exactly as Muhammad trimmed his. There are all sorts of rules, and in the traditions, practically everything you could possibly think of is covered. And so this is so that Muslims may walk in the right way, doing the right things. But the emphasis in the traditions is on what Muhammad did and what he said. The traditions, or hadith, as they are called in Arabic, are the collections of the works and actions of the words and actions of Muhammad, and sometimes included are those of his companions, the words and actions of his companions, his close band of followers. The word hadith, actually in Arabic, means piece of information, account, narrative, and record. Muhammad is regarded as the ideal man, the example. So it's very important to know exactly how he spoke and acted. In Surah 33 and verse 21, it is written, "Verily, in the Messenger of Allah, ye have a good example for him who looketh unto Allah and the last day and remembereth Allah much." So Muhammad was not the perfect man as Jesus is and was. Muhammad is the ideal man. He is the pattern. But somewhere he prays for forgiveness for sin, and in the Quran it is so written, I think. So he is not considered perfect. He might be perfect in the generalities, but he erred and strayed in some things. So he's the example, but not the perfect man. There are also traditions which are called Hadith Qudsi. I don't know if you've come across these, but it's Hadith like this, H-A-I-T-D-I-T-H, and then Qudsi, Q-U-D-S-I. And these are special. They are words that are not written in the Quran, which God spoke to Muhammad. So that's, for example, one well-known hadith Qudsi is, "Allah has said, ask from me through mentioning my names." Ask from me through mentioning my names. This is a hadith, this is a something that Muhammad received from God and is not incorporated in the Quran. Well, I think that's probably... Yes, we should mention the reliability of the traditions. And I have already explained, perhaps, that each tradition has a text, what is actually written. That's the text. And you can write it in... English, either matan or matn, mutton. And then that's the actual text. This is what Muhammad is recorded as having said. But there is the chain, isnad. Isnad, I-S-N-A-D, is the stage, the so-and-so, Muhammad said it, and actually you start up here in the end of the chain. So-and-so heard from so-and-so who was told by so-and-so that so-and-so said, and so on, right the way down till you come back to Muhammad. I'll read it this way. It will go like this. I heard a companion of Muhammad. We're saying A, he's called A. Well, let's say it, put it this way. The chain of hadiths will be like this. F told me. Now, A is just, I'm using A, F and A, B, C, D, sorry. F told me, saying E said, D had informed him, saying E mentioned that he heard B relate, and this is what he heard B relate. I heard A, a companion of Muhammad, say to the apostle of God. And so then it goes, and then you get the text. But it goes through generations. There were hundreds of thousands of hadith, hundreds of thousands of traditions. Those that were regarded as authentic were collected into six compilations during the 9th and early 10th centuries. There were other collections, but these six formed the canonical Sunnah. And then there's the ones that we all come across and that you could find easily. I think you'd find them in the library here, at least some of them. You'll find the Sahih. Sahih means genuine, of Al-Bukhari. Al-Bukhari, Al-A-L, and then Bukhari, B-U-K-H-A-R-I. You would find the Jami, that's the collection of Al-Timidi. Tirmidhi, T-I-R-M-I-D-H-I. There are others. There's Muslim, not a Muslim, but his name is Muslim, M-U-S-L-I. He did a collection. And there is Al-Nasai, A-L, and then N-A-S-A-I. He did a collection. And there are other collections. So when we look at the hadith, we look at something out of these collections. I'd like you, somehow or the other, to actually physically take out a volume of hadith from the library. I mean, maybe you can just take it down from the shelf and look at it for 15 minutes. Let's have... people from this, let's have six of you, so over this way. You go and take down, shall we say, I think Muslim is there, but I don't know. Anyway, the rest of this side, if you would go and get something at some point, take a hadith out of the volumes, several volumes of Bukhari, Al-Bukhari. I know he's there. But what you will do is maybe our pastor friend here, he could take volume one and get something out of volume one. Volume two, volume three, volume four, volume five, volume six. I think there are six volumes of him. Seven. Okay. All right. Why don't you get volume seven of Bukhari? And then you people, will you see what other traditions are there? You might find collections of several people. You might see four volumes of Muslim or something and so many volumes of Al-Timidi. Well, I'd just like you to see how many volumes these people have in the library and how many could be in the library, and just write down a hadith from them so that you've physically engaged with the real hadith, because all you've done so far, I think, is engage with quotations from the hadith in Phil Parshall's book, in Stoas's book, and in other references that you've come across. But you haven't perhaps done very much in physically engaging with these large collections, which are, in, for our benefit, in English as well as Arabic. The authentic text is Arabic.
The big focus that it's all focused on the comfort and preference of the male. So everything has to do with the woman and what they're doing to make sure that the husband is taken care of properly.
Yes.
So having to do with divorce, everything.
Okay. Yeah. Can everybody hear that? Good. Okay. So you heard that. That's very true. Thank you very much. Anything else? Anybody else? Yes, you had something. Who else? You had something, did you, EJ?
Yes, I think, again, just coming at it from the male gender perspective, it's again sad to see that, you know, the blame is always shifted back on the women as far as the source of man's so-called weakness.
Yes.
And rather than, as in God's word, you know, God holding man accountable for what he thinks.
Yes.
And what he sees.
Yeah.
And not blaming, right, you know, women for...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm very skeptical when, you know, someone claims that it was the other woman that seduced them or just trying to
tempt
them.
Yeah, right. I don't know if it was Stoas that I was reading where the suggestion seemed to be that there is a weakness in women that's because they descend from Eve. Well, even a sinfulness, which seems very strange in that Muslims don't believe in original sin. So there shouldn't be any spin-off from Eve. But Stoas, I think, mentions that. Anyway, yes, thank you, EJ. I realise that you're making a slightly different point, but it's still interesting to consider this. Yes, anyone else want to comment? Doreen?
I felt that the whole chapter gave a very good overview of women in Islam, because it took in many subjects. There were many subjects covered in the chapter, and I felt anyone who wanted to find out what their thinking is, I felt this was a fair appraisal. I felt that he covered it with references, although I too wasn't quite sure where he got all
of it. Yes, I think we should try and crack that one. Yeah, right. Thank you. Right. Did you notice that sometimes hadiths don't agree with each other? Did you find that? Especially, you see, if they're from different collections. What did you... Anyone find an example of that? There's... Oh, yes, here... I was talking about Eve... there's the narrated by Abu Huraira. The Prophet said, "Were it not for Eve, no woman would ever betray her husband." See, that's not according to Islamic theology, because there shouldn't be a spin-off. The idea was that Adam and Eve were totally responsible for their own sin, and there is not an original sin. There is a weakness. Mary and Jesus were the only people not touched at birth by Satan, according to Islamic tradition, another tradition. Everyone else was touched at birth, which results in being man and woman being created weak. Not sinful, but weak. Any other comments on this section? Yes, please.
I thought it was interesting the discrepancy in the temporary marriage that some people, the Sunni Muslims in their tradition, embrace it, seeming wholeheartedly, and the Shiites seem to kind of look down on it.
Yes, that's right. Can you quote a hadith about it? Where is it?
On page 176.
Yeah.
A woman may legally belong to a man in one of two ways, by continuing marriage or temporary marriage. Mm. In the former, the duration of the marriage need not be specified. In the latter, it must be stipulated. For example, that it is for a period of an hour, a day, a month, or a year or more.
Yes, thank you. So the word is muta, M-U-T-A, word for temporary marriage, and it's practiced only by Shia Muslims. It's condemned by Sunnis, but the Ayatollah Khomeini, he advocated it. Here we read, since temporary marriage is vigorously condoned by the 10% of Muslims who are Shiites, it's proper to quote the late Ayatollah Khomeini, who is still the acknowledged spiritual head of the community. And this is what our sister here has done, quoted from Khomeini, not from the traditions, but that's okay. Anything else? You want a second innings, Jay?
No, I'll decline this time.
Okay. Under miscellaneous treatment, it's interesting to see Abu Huraira. He says, the Prophet said, a woman is married for four things: her wealth, her family status, her beauty, and her religion. So there seem that's a it's not entirely encouraging, I find. And then there's the story narrated by Abdullah bin Umar. I heard the Prophet saying, an evil omen is in three things: the horse, the woman, and the house. So, and the translator of this tradition, translating from the Arabic, he says, superstition is disliked in Islam, but if one should think that there are things of bad omen, one may find such a bad omen in a horse that is obstinate and not used for jihad, a woman that is sterile or discontented or impudent, a house that is not spacious or far from a mosque, and near a bad neighbour. So the question might be, how does a woman feel about being told she's an evil omen? And you have below the account of Aisha, who objected, and the hadith is written, things which annul the prayers were mentioned before me. They said, prayer is annulled by a dog, a donkey, and a woman if they pass in front of the praying people. I said, you have made us, women, dogs. And so there was she was very young. She was 18 when Muhammad died, but she didn't mind speaking up, and so she argued the toss on this one. And then there's the whole matter in the hadith, which say that many women will be found in hell. Many women will be found in hell. There is a hadith, and I can't locate it, that for every 1,000 men in paradise, there will only be one woman. And for every one man in hell, there will be 1,000 women. And here's another, so I can't tell you where it comes from, but it's from the hadith. But I can tell you here, I can read from a quote from Phil Parshall, where he talks about what was said by Abu ul-Khudri. Once Allah's apostle went out to the Masalla to offer prayer. He went out to offer prayer of Al-Fitr prayer. That's the feast. Then he passed by the women and said, O women, give alms, as I have seen that the majority of dwellers of hellfire were you, women. They asked, why is it so, O Allah's apostle? He replied, you curse frequently and are ungrateful to your husbands. Ingratitude is a great sin in Islam. I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you. A cautious, sensible man could be led astray by some of you. The women asked, O Allah's apostle, what is deficient in our intelligence and religion? He said, is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man? They replied in the affirmative. He said, this is the deficiency in your intelligence. Isn't it true that a woman can neither pray nor fast during her menses? The women replied in the affirmative. He said, this is the deficiency in your religion. So we've got here then, the Prophet then further explains why the majority of dwellers of hell are women. They're there because of their lack of intelligence, evidenced by the fact that their testimony in a court of law is only worth half of that of a man. And in religious matters, they are deficient because they cannot pray or keep fast during the time of their monthly period. They're also declared worthy of hell because of their cursing and ingratitude to husbands. And, this is the Hadith. The Hadith have got it a bit more loaded against women than the Quran is much more fair, I would, from my perspective. And men and women are spiritually equal, according to the Quran, as we saw yesterday. The Hadith have got some good things to say about women, but there's some very bad things about women. And some of the feminists, as we'll see next week in Islam, Muslim feminists, they're not all women, but most of them are women, some of them argue that the Quran, if we followed the Quran, it would be okay for women, but if we look at the Hadith, then some people only do look at the Hadith, or that somehow they hear it and they don't read, and they get these stories in the Hadith, some of them rather funny and some of them quite interesting. They get familiar with it, and so they have the perspective of the Hadith on the position of women. And so people like Fatima Mirnissi, she doesn't hold with some of these traditions. For example, she considered, and she wrote a book which I'll show you today or some other day, called Forgotten Queens of Islam, because she was showing that there were outstanding women rulers, queens, people who held political power of some sort or another. But she thought she'd tried out on her grocer. I think it was probably when Benazir became Prime Minister of Pakistan. So when she went to her grocer, she said, what do you think about a woman ruling a country, being the ruler of a country? What about Benazir? I don't know if it was that time or not. But anyway, she asked him to see what he was going to say. So he quoted a Hadith, the country that is ruled by a woman will never prosper. So, end of story, I suppose. But it's not, actually. And the Quran is quite clear about possibilities for women to have some leadership, at least. Muhammad is said to have consulted his wives, and especially some of them, one of them or sometimes and several at other times, on working matters. He brought his work home, if you like. He discussed it with his wives sometimes. He got their input. And we can see more about this. So have you got a question before we conclude?
I just had one more observation. We were talking about the youthfulness of the brides. And one neighbor was saying, I saw a neighbor of mine who was a grandmother at the age of 21. And we just talked about the youthfulness of it. And one of the translators note that women attain puberty at the age of 9 and were married and given birth to a child at 10. So we talk about the youthfulness of these brides.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was true for Aisha. I thought that yesterday I said that she married Muhammad, or he married her, when she was 9. But actually he married her when she was 6. And he had intercourse with her when she was nine. And it says that she had started having her periods. So otherwise it would have been wrong for him to have had intercourse with her. So there is that side to it. A marriage tends to be young. I mean, women or children, women marry very young in the Muslim world, but it's becoming more regulated now by economics and also and other factors. So you find the age of marriage for women is getting a bit older in some places. But you do find their minimum ages for marriage in various Muslim countries. But when births are not registered, difficult to prove that somebody's 16 if that's the minimum age for marriage. They might be 14 or even 13. I don't think we get too much of children of 9 or 10, but there may be an arrangement between two families that this boy and this girl, who are very small, will marry, but probably the marriage will not take place until they're reasonably near what the law requires in the country. But it may not be so in a more remote tribal area. It will be somewhat perhaps different there. So we'll conclude then our thinking about women in the Hadith, and in the next session we'll go on, well, we will continue it, because we're going to think about the wives of Muhammad. Muhammad's wives. So in a sense it's still women in the Hadith, or because they are mentioned in the Hadith, some of them. So that's where we'll leave it now.